Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here. This is another installation of Bloodlines with your co-host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. And today we're going to do another episode of In the Name of Yahweh. But first, Andrew has a quick announcement, and so do I, before we get into the subject matter. Turn it over to you, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you, Pastor Eli, and apologies to everybody. It's the first time that I've hit the broadcaster myself, and I forgot to hit a certain button. But I did actually forget to start recording at the start of the show, so sorry we're a little bit late, but we're going to have everything that we're saying to you now recorded as well. So what I've got here is we've talked about, there's a couple of issues I'm going to address first. And it should only take me a couple of minutes to read. We've talked about Willis Carto, American Free Press stroke, The Spotlight. There's an actual biography, if you like, of him, and it's called Willis Carto and the American Far Right. It's by a guy called George Michael, not the singer. It says, George Michael, assistant professor of...
Is this a complimentary book, or is it a critical book, would you say?
Well, I mean... People were actually saying, I think it was written as supposed to be a critical book, but then people in the right wing were saying it seemed sympathetic. But what I read, it's got the usual, oh, these people believe that, you know, 6 million Jews didn't die and all this weird, you know, that sort of stuff they keep going on about, you know. So in my opinion, it's not really a book worth reading. I wouldn't recommend it. Certainly, I read through it this week and it didn't really... tell me much, to be honest. And I've always been, you see, what people have got to be aware is these so-called right-wing, left-wing, they still believe that politics is going to save them. And you and I and the listeners know that politics is no solution.
That's right.
And so when they talk about, oh, and, yes. You know, Willis Carto was associated with this person and this person. I mean, there's some interesting things. There's some, you know, him and William Pierce were close for a bit and then they went their own way. And different. There's some interesting things if you like the way that, you know, certain movements, you know, went into different things and, you know, different directions that they went in and how they started off and then people splintering off into different areas, etc. But, I mean, the... interesting bits that I got out of it. This is just, let me have a quick look. It's about a page. I'll read it. It's about Christian identity, and it's talking about, it's chapter 4, page 35, and it's referring to his first publication that Willis Carto did called Right, which he did in the, you know, 50s/60s. It says, in addition to race, religion received considerable attention in the pages of Right. Christian fundamentalism has been an enduring theme in the history of right-wing extremism in the United States. For the contemporary far right, an obscure religious theology, Christian identity, does much to bind the movement together. Christian identity has no central ecclesiastical body, but rather is a very loose network of individual believers and small congregations. The religion has its origins in 19th century England's British Israelism, which posited that the peoples of northwestern Europe were the true descendants of the 10 lost tribes of Israel. Originally, the British movement was philo-Semitic in character, seeking to identify themselves as people kindred with the Jews, but eventually this sect found its way to America and metamorphosized into Christian identity. There are several variations in beliefs among Christian identity adherents, and not all are anti-Semitic. Many variants of this religion do, however, demonize Jews. Carto allowed Christian identity ministers to publish guest columns in the pages of Right. For example, an early contribution by J.A. Lovell, D.D., in 1957 claimed that the prophets Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Jacob's 12 sons, Moses and David were not Jews. According to his reading of Scripture, God's covenant with Abraham included people of Anglo-Saxon descent. Further, the 12 tribes of Israel were divided. 10 tribes were later sent to Assyrian captivity. After their release, according to Christian identity historiography, they travelled the southern part of what is now Russia, stopping for long periods in the Crimea and in Greece, until they finally reached the Promised Land, Western Europe, including the British Isles. Some Christian identity theologians maintain that contemporary Jews as we know them today are actually descendants of a long-lost Eurasian tribe, the Khazars, who converted
right.
to...
Yeah. Yes. Who converted to... That's an excellent summary of identity. It actually is.
Yeah, Sorry that's to... it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I can see why some people, you know, he's going through it here. He says the Khazars, who converted to Judaism en masse in the 8th century, anti-Semites and occasionally some anti-Zionists invoked this theory to reject contemporary Jewish ancestral claims to Palestine. And then it says, Richard Kelly Hoskins, an important contributor to Christian identity literature, was highlighted in Wright. Hoskins wrote Our Nordic Race, which was a short racial history. According to Hoskins, Nordics were the progenitors of the white race. As he explained, the various national groups of Europe, for example, the Dutch, Irish, English and Scottish, were all part of the same race, and their members should identify with one another in order to meet the challenges posed by other races, namely blacks and Jews. Decades later, Hoskins wrote a book called Vigilantes of Christendom that attained popularity on the far right and was said to have contributed to the popularity of leaderless resistance in the movement. In the book, Hoskins offered his bizarre interpretation of historical events. According to Hoskins, throughout history, righteous Phineas priests have fulfilled a sacred role by assassinating those who have transgressed God's law. Not long after first publication of the book, several right-wing terrorists identified themselves as Phineas priests and engaged in criminal acts, including robbery and terrorism. From what I can infer, Carto did not believe in the theology of Christian identity. However, he found merit in some of its tenets in that it fostered white racial solidarity. In 2007, he wrote an article defending Christian identity, arguing that both the Catholic and Protestant denominations in contemporary America had failed to provide spiritual and moral guidance to their white followers and instead sought to attract non-whites to their flocks. So that Amen. Concludes that bit. So yes. That'd be interesting to find, Pastor Eli, a 2007 article that Willis Carto wrote defending Christian identity.
Right, and that's fascinating because I think you said that article by Lavelle dated back to 1957.
Yeah.
That's correct, I don't recall seeing any pro-identity columns written by any identity ministers or pro-identity people ever in AFP or the Spotlight. Okay, I just don't recall ever seeing, because I had subscribed to both for many, many years. So although he did allow ads by identity people, you know, selling their books, he was not shy about that. But pro-identity, I think the pro-identity article was published in the magazine, the Barnes Review.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, all right. And which was more open, but he also published in the Barnes Review a rabbinical defense of Torah Judaism, which, in my opinion, there is no such thing, right? I tried to contact him to write a rebuttal to that. And actually, the rabbi bemoaned the fact that there's too few rabbis who actually obey the Torah, right? But the point was to legitimize Judaism as the religion of the Bible, which it is not. You know that. Therefore, I really tried to rebut that article, and it fell on deaf ears. So I don't know. But this was in the AFP years, when the Spotlight, I think, was actually more more out there. You know, more courageous and more daring, which is understandable because the lawsuit that Willis Carto lost on behalf of the Spotlight, I'm sure, affected the editorial policy. Okay. Just one comment that the author makes about right-wingers or identity people becoming vigilantes of Christianity or Christendom and enacting the Phineas priesthood rite of execution of lawbreakers. That never happened. Even Robert Matthews, who was accused of such things, there's no proof that he ever did it, that they ever robbed banks or that identity people robbed banks or killed people. These were always fringe groups who were not really our identity, but who pretended to be, okay? All of the evidence suggests that real identity people, such as the Order, Pastor Robert Miles being one of the major members there, they were put on trial and found innocent. So in every single case where identity people have been put on trial, they were not convicted, And, of course, the left and the Jews fail to mention that fact. They will mention, oh, they were put on trial for this and for that, but they'll never mention that they were acquitted, okay? So, again, that's a canard. That's a lie about Christian identity. We do not preach violence. Because for the simple fact of the matter, Deuteronomy 28 tells us that if we simply obey his laws, Yahweh will take care of our enemies. And so our message is, people, white people, they obey Yahweh's laws. And Yahweh will take care of your enemies. So since our people are so tragically disobedient to Yahweh's laws, and that includes the whole of Catholicism and Protestantism, that's why the world is in such a big mess.
Okay? Absolutely, yeah. And, I mean, this is the whole point. If you were around in the Old Testament time when, you know, Yahweh said, when these, you know, in Deuteronomy, etc., and if you don't take care of these people, then they're going to be, you know, pricks in your eyes and thorns in your side, etc. But he's talking about that time. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
And this is, it's always a difficult point because, you know, of course we say Yahweh doesn't change. But the fact is, the situation now is if all these people are going to go out as lone wolves, there's going to be no identity people left to actually round right. up what there is left of the flock. That's the whole point. And so it might, your people out there might want to let off steam, but by doing that, then they're kind of...
They can't do it against Yahweh's laws, right? And they can't take the law into their own hands.
Okay? No, I mean...
Phineas, the person that he executed was sinning in front of the whole congregation. There was no trial needed, right? That's a different story when you're trying to decide, well, is the guy really guilty, and did he do this in private? You know, so the Phineas priesthood, he had all the evidence in the world. There was no trial needed. And Yahweh actually blessed the congregation when he executed that race-mixing pair.
Okay. But I think the problem is people would say today, well, I've got evidence here. I can see a white woman and a black man pushing a mixed-race child along. What more evidence do you need?
Right.
Do you see what I mean? Right. That's the problem. But my issue on that is that what are you actually would you achieve more in teaching Yahweh's message, or would you achieve more in confronting these people and risking a prison term?
Exactly. Do you dare risk that? You know, and would you be more productive staying out of prison and teaching the message as opposed to going to jail, probably for the rest of your life, right?
Yeah.
So we have to think very carefully about our actions, right?
Yeah,
and not take the law into our own hands. Yeah,
exactly. And that's what we always say on this show, because we understand the positions of the Old Testament, but the fact is that if you don't do this, then this will happen. Well, they didn't do it, and that's what's happened, you know? And that's what was always going to happen, because otherwise you wouldn't be seeing in the book the prophetic books like Ezekiel and Isaiah, and of course in Revelation, where we've got this racial flood coming over that we're seeing happening now. And so, you know, you've got to adapt to the times that you're in. And I have no doubt that call will come in. But it's when we know that Yahweh's return, we'll know what we have to do. And until that point, we occupy until he returns, and we do our best to spread his message so that there's people for him to return to.
Right. And the lone warrior is really taking a chance against the system. You know, the old saying is you can't fight City Hall. Well, if you fight it in an organized fashion, just like we had some good news that a common law grand jury is assembling in Utah, or in Oregon, rather, in Burns, Oregon. And the likelihood of putting the FBI killers, murderers on trial is very good. So, you know, we have to send our prayers to that common law jury to put the feds on trial, because the Bundys and the Hammonds and the Finnecombs, they didn't violate any laws. They just didn't. Okay. So this understanding of common law, which is based on the Bible, it is very important that America is based on biblical law. And this has to be upheld. And we know, of course, that the Jews and the feds and the leftists and the Greens, who are really Reds, are doing their absolute utmost to federalize everything and turn our country into a communist Jewish state. And this is, they don't realize that. They don't realize the depth of the problem, but they know they have to defend the Constitution, and that's a great thing.
Exactly. And I've got one other page here, which is only about a paragraph. This is about the Populist Party and page 159 that, you know, Liberty Lobby were putting together in the 1980s. They were trying to put together this Populist Party. They thought that they could defeat, you know, these evildoers in the elections, which, of course, as we know, is not going to happen. But it's an interesting paragraph here. The Populist Party was formally created in 1984. The new party emphasised traditional themes promoted by Liberty Lobby. One of its fundraising letters warned of the impending New World Order, gun control and new hate crime laws. This revived brand of populism endeavoured to reach out to farmers that were squeezed by the farm crisis of the 1980s. According to political scientist Leonard Weinberg, the Populist Party sought to exploit
I smell a fungus.
Exactly. Well, this is what he says. The Populist Party sought to exploit the fears of Midwestern farmers and focus their discontent on Jewish bankers and financiers. Well, if they're the people bankrupting them at their farms, who are they supposed to blame?
Right, exactly.
And then
you can't blame the Jews. You see, that's verboten. Thou shalt not blame the Jews.
Exactly. It's amazing what these people come out with. And anyway, it just says, skillfully, Willis Carto sought to link the specific problems of farmers with the wider perceived menace of global Zionism. According to this reasoning, plutocrats conspired to bankrupt independent farmers. The only effective solution to this problem was populism. To raise awareness of this issue, the Spotlight reprinted a popular tract which implicated Jewish financiers in the farm crisis. Billions for the bankers, debts for the people by Sheldon Emery, a prominent Christian identity leader. During that period, the ADL characterised the Populist Party's campaign to exploit the farm crisis as the most sophisticated political move by the extreme right in recent memory. And that's everything that I've got from... So you'd be familiar from that track by Sheldon Emery, are you, Pastor Eli? I've not read that.
Right, yeah, we have that up on Anglo-Saxon Israel, Pastor Sheldon Emery's tract, you know, debts for the people, billions for the bankers, debts for the people. And obviously, he is expressing the banker's point of view there, okay? So in other words, the exploiters are accusing the people who are being victimized of exploiting the reality, right? It's incredible.
Yeah.
Right. And Gordon Kahl was another person like that who combined his farming with an understanding of the U.S. Constitution and the Bible. And guess what happened to him? He was executed. His hands and feet were chopped off and his remains were burned to destroy the evidence. He was set up just like Finucane was set up with a roadblock, no warrant, and he was executed. Okay, so if anything, the Liberty Lobby was correct in foreseeing these things, right? Because they're all happening now.
Exactly.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And I've got one last thing. I got hold of this book, and it's by Michael Collins Piper. It's called My First Days in the White House, and it's his first sort of non-fiction book that he did back in 2008. And I was using it for some project that I'm looking at that I'm going to maybe do in the future, but essentially it's to do with my show. I won't go into it just yet. I wanted to see what I could get out of it. Unfortunately, I couldn't get out of it what I thought would be in it, but I did get some interesting things out of it. I was looking at it today, and I want to read this to you. Now, bear in mind, the ethos of this book is, it says here that basically what happens essentially in this book is that the writer and broadcaster Michael Collins Piper is made interim president when there's a military coup in 2008 to overthrow George W. Bush. And this is what he does in his first days in the White House, okay? And so there's some things I've noted down. I'm not going to go into them, but there was one thing that I wanted to go into. Now, firstly, he is going to make his FBI director Jim Trafficant, okay?
Okay.
He's also going to make his Solicitor General Edgar Steele. So this all sounds quite good, but I want to read this bit.
Okay.
In the realm of law enforcement, and this is from page 64 of the book, My First Days in the White House, and the chapter is Selecting a Cabinet. In the realm of law enforcement, I perceived the need for an Attorney General who was in sharp contrast to the previous authoritarian Bush administration figures, pro-Zionist fanatic John Ashcroft and his successor, hardline Orthodox Jew Michael Mukasey. So it was that I turned to an experienced attorney who was a no-holds-barred civil libertarian, no less than my old friend Mark Lane, an anti-Zionist Jew of independent mind and supremely humane spirit. He says, frankly, the appointment of a Jewish cabinet minister was considered somewhat heretical by some of the Revolutionary Tribune, but Mark had always been firmly anti-Zionist and an outspoken critic of the power elite and was renowned for his unswerving respect for individual liberties. So by the very revolutionary nature of the new regime, standing with the support of the military, it was important to assure the American people that this new regime was not an authoritarian dictatorship. Of course, it had been necessary in the days and weeks and months following the revolution to deal with the enemies of the revolution in a firm manner, but as the new government was being instituted, we wanted to lay the groundwork for genuine reform, eliminating those vestiges of authoritarianism that had been set in place under the Bush era of misrule. So Mark Lane was the perfect choice to serve as Attorney General. And for those around the world who did not perhaps understand what was happening in America and who feared the rise of a new Nazism in our country, and even for some of our more liberal friends who, while perhaps supportive of the revolution, were otherwise unconcerned about military influence in the new government or about the fact that some members of the regime, myself included, had reputations of being right-wing or even anti-Jewish in nature, it was thus rather productive to have a traditional progressive who also happened to be Jewish, namely Mark Lane, in the post of Attorney General. In that post, Mark laid the groundwork for a restoration of our constitutional republic.
So, in other words, to avoid the charge of racism, he would appoint a Jew.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, that's silly, of course. That's silly. And, we cannot trust Jews. First of all, again, here's where identity comes into play. Since Mark Lane is, in fact, Jewish, he is of the demon seed of the bloodline of Cain, and there's no way we could have any one of those people among us. There's a fungus among us.
Exactly.
It's the Jews. There's no way. Simply no way. Of course, Michael Collins Piper was not identity. And this is where the white nationalist movement continues to go astray in thinking that there's Jews that are actual patriots. They're never Christians. They're never pro-white, despite some appearances. And the same thing, I can't remember the football player fullback for this Arizona Cardinals, and he was in Afghanistan, and he entrusted Barry Chamish, a well-known quote
Pat unquote, Tillman
anti-Zionist Jew, right?
Was it Pat Tillman?
Hello?
Sorry, was it
oh,
Pat
yeah, Tillman? Yeah. Yes, Pat Tillman. That he trusted Barry Chamish with the information that he wanted to go public denouncing America's war in Afghanistan. And because he falsely believed that Barry Chamish was for real, Barry Chamish stabbed him in the back and actually was part of a plot. And he basically turned him over to the military authorities. And he was literally shot in the back and murdered because he was planning on going public with his condemnation of America's presence in Afghanistan. So this is what he got for trusting a Jew.
Exactly. And this is the whole point. I mean, and I know what we're going to do now, and just before we do, is we're going to turn over to you, Pastor Eli, because we talked about the wheat and the tares last week, and we're going to go back to that because you found an article and a good song as well. But before we do, I'm just going to read out the lineup for this week on the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show. Firstly, I want to apologize both to Pastor Dan and to Brett Light of ExpelTheParasite.com. As people who listened last Monday, they will realize that Pastor Dan was scheduled, but there was a problem in the scheduler, and for some reason, Brett got played on Monday just gone instead of Pastor Dan when he was supposed to be played this Monday. But Brett was okay with it, so was Pastor Dan. Thank you for that, both of you. And so we're going to have Pastor Dan going out on Monday, definitely this time, with his tips for good health. And on Tuesday, which is the 1st of March, we've got Pastor Bob Jones, and he's going to give us his bio. And then on Wednesday, the 2nd of March, we've got Monica Stone, and she's going to talk about the South Africa Project and white genocide in South Africa, which is where she is based. On Thursday, we've got Chris's new Ensign group, and a lot of them are listening now and commenting on the show, and they're very welcome. And we're looking at a new project with them on a regular basis, where I actually spoke, there was, I think, five of us on at once. And so we talked about the new Ensign group, and you know, it was a really good discussion because there was, as I say, five of us on there at once. And then the Friday, it's going to be myself and Paul English. We haven't fully decided what the subject's going to be yet, but that's the lineup. So I'll now hand over to you, and you've got an article for us, I believe, Pastor Eli.
Right, on Darnell. But by the way, I'd like to compliment you on the show. Well, it was played, I think, Saturday on Nora Davis's perspective and identity, which is always very, very good. Nora Davis needs to be featured more and more. His teachings were outstanding. And,
yeah.
You know, so thank you for doing that. But yeah, the tears in Darnell. This is an article by Ed Tarkowski, and the parable of the wheat and the tares refers to an identifiable type of weed called Darnell. And the parallels between this Darnell weed and the Jewish people are astonishing. And the effects that the poison created by, it's actually a fungus, created by Darnell, is identifiable in Judeo-Christians. Okay, this is very interesting stuff. So he goes into, a friend recently wrote to me about how pro-lifer her garden was, how prolific her garden was, but that the weeds were prospering as well. She said that because of the rains, the weeds would be easy to pull up. I thought, how, when we would we allow the rain of God's word into our life? The lies, untruths, and deceptions are also easy to weed out. Well, they're not easy. But if the word is not given in its place of priority, then when those evils take root and the ground hardens, how hard is it to pull up the weeds? Have you ever tried to pull a weed out of a dry, caked, hardened piece of ground? What usually happens is you pull off the green foliage above the soil, but the root remains only to quickly grow again. How often has the world tried to get rid of the Jews? They still stick around, right? Jesus told the parable of the tares and the wheat in Matthew 13:24-30. The tares are a weed plant, but Jesus didn't say to pull up the tares. He said to let the wheat and the tares grow up together, and the angels would deal with the tares at the end of the age. I sure would have liked to apply that to my dad's idea of weeding. The difference between the garden I weeded and the wheat field Jesus spoke of is this. My garden was vegetables, planted and grown and rose with dirt paths between. The weeds were easy to get to, and pulling them without harming the good plants was easy enough. When wheat is grown in fields, each sheaf next to another with no paths, creating a carpet effect when looked at from a distance. Pulling up the tares in this situation would endanger the wheat stalks as well. You just don't weed wheat. Okay, so that's the essence of the parable. And I won't bother to quote it here. He just quotes it again. But from Holman's Bible Dictionary, the definition of tares is as follows. Tares, KJV, term for grassy weeds resembling wheat, resembling Israel, generally identified as Darnell, genus Lolium. It is pretty much accepted today that the tares Jesus spoke of are Darnell of the genus Lolium. Cephalaria syriaca is also a possibility mentioned by some researchers, but based on archaeological studies, it is evident in biblical times, its evident lack in biblical times would seem to indicate it is not the tare of the Bible. secular dictionaries also define the tares as most likely being darnel. From the World English Dictionary, darnel is a weed grass, probably bearded darnel, bearded rabbis, right? Lolium temulentum, that looks very much like wheat until it's mature, when the seeds reveal a great difference. Darnel seeds aren't good for much except as chicken feed or to burn to prevent the spread of the weed. So, okay, the tares have to be bundled and burned, right? Easton's Bible Dictionary describes tares as follows. The bearded darnel, mentioned only in Matthew 13 to 25 to 30, it is the Lolium temulentum, a species of ryegrass, the seeds of which are a strong soporific poison. How about Judaism? It bears the closest resemblance to wheat till the ear appears, and only then the difference is discovered. It grows plentifully in Syria and Palestine. So we see the parallels between the Jews and the tares in this darnel, and there's more. I'm just going to cut it short. Here are some of the effects of having a tare poisoning, because there's a fungus that grows on the tares, which affects the people who eat the mistakenly eat the tares instead of the wheat. And here are the symptoms. 10 symptoms. 1, sleepiness, drowsiness. This is what the Jews do to Judeo-Christians. Hypnotic episodes, convulsions. Yes, the Jews cause convulsions among the wheat. Drunkenness, intoxication. Yeah, aren't the Jews in the business of selling booze and narcotics? 5, trembling, people shaking from all of the convulsions. Inability to walk, hindered speech, vomiting, stupefaction, dim-sightedness. These are all symptoms of believing that the Jews are God's chosen people. Right? The comparison between Lolium temulentum or darnel and the Jews is incredibly accurate. Incredibly accurate. And just to mention one episode in, I forget what the name of the town where the witches were executed. Salem, Massachusetts. It has been discovered that it wasn't that the girls were witches. They had actually eaten some darnel and had gone into one of these hypnotic episodes and were trembling and speaking in tongues and all this kind of stuff. And they didn't know what it was, but it turned out that they had eaten some darnel, and this is what the result was. So here, I just want to play this one song real quickly. That this is Terry Nolan's "There Was a Fungus Among Us." And it really is very good. If you think of the fungus as the Jews, it fits. Here it is.
There was a fungus among us. There was a rumble in the jungle. There was a static in the attic, a moaning and a groaning, a fungus among us. We had a fight in the middle of the night. There was a fungus among us.
Which one is the fungus? That's the background.
The other night, somebody got mad and they started to fight. I couldn't understand what it caused at all. But nevertheless, so we were having a ball. There was a fungus among us.
Which one is the fungus?
There was a fungus among us.
Which one is the fungus?
There was a gluten for the bruising.
Put it to an end then and bend the trend. That had some significant slogans in there, like cruising for a bruising. That's where that slogan came from. So, yeah, there's a fungus among us, folks, and there's static in the attic. And ergo, I think, is the name of the poisonous fungus that the tares put out. And so, of course, that corresponds to Jewish propaganda. I mean, the comparison between darnel and the Jews is absolutely perfect. So when you see such a metaphor being used in the Bible, there's way more to it than meets the eye. That's why you have to do Bible research and figure out what Yahshua is actually telling us. All right? And so the Jews fit the darnel to a T. They do.
Yeah, and that song, did you say that was from the late 50s, Pastor Eli?
I think it was, yeah.
It sounds in that sort of sound.
Yeah, yeah, it was excellent sound. It was obviously well recorded. Mm. And this is the Terry Nolan version. There's other versions that are not as well preserved. But yeah, there was a Fungus Among Us by Terry Nolan. It's really quite an interesting song.
Yeah, and the just to let the listeners know, the article you were reading from is from www.deceptioninthechurch.com/tears. That's www.deceptioninthechurch.com/tears. So yes. Have you got anything else that you want to go through before we jump into In the Name of Yahweh, Pastor Eli?
No, let's go.
You sure? Okay, let me see. Where are we? Oh, hang on. Oh, that's all right. I pressed something and about a load of documents came up, but I've got it now. Yeah, we got up to my subheading that I've put in. It's just to give things a title. I've just called it Jews of the Devil, and on your document, it's page 43, right at the top. Okay. And what I've got is there's quite a few, this is basically a few examples of the scripture telling us that the Jews are of the devil.
Right.
And I've got here, again, you jump in when you want to, because I've got chapter 13, verses 6 through 10. It says, "And when they had gone through the isle unto Paphos, they found a certain sorcerer, a false prophet, a Jew, whose name was Bar-Jesus, which was with the deputy of the country, Sergius Paulus, a prudent man, who called for Barnabas and Saul, and desired to hear the word of God. But Almias, the sorcerer, for so is his name by interpretation, withstood them, seeking to turn away the deputy from the faith. Then Saul, who also is called Paul, filled with the Holy Ghost, set his eyes on him and said, O full of all subtlety and all mischief, thou child of the devil, thou enemy of all righteousness, wilt thou not cease to pervert the right ways of the Lord?
There was a fungus among them then.
Yeah. Right?
Okay. Yeah, well, the lesson is that from the very beginning, as soon as Yahshua died on the cross, the perverters of Christianity were hard at work already, okay? And so the people who call themselves Christians must understand that there's always false teachers among them, and they should be, they keep their eyes open and their ears open and make sure that whoever the pastor is that they're listening to conforms with the scriptures. And, of course, the vast majority of Judeo-Christians don't. They're simply sheep listening to whoever is at the pulpit and not really concerned with accuracy or righteousness, which is obedience to the law. Okay? So Acts 13:10 says, thou enemy of all righteousness, and I would include all antinomians, the dispensationalists who teach that the law has been done away with, are enemies of all righteousness. We have a fungus in the Judeo-Christian church, folks.
Yeah, and I also thought that what's interesting here, because for the anti-Paul people, he refers to them as a child of the devil. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, if he was a Jew, as some people claim, then he would be a child of the devil too, wouldn't he?
Sure. Well, but he identifies himself as an Israelite of the tribe of Benjamin,
exactly.
Which would be the house of Judah. But you can't confuse Judahites with Jews. That's just a word trick that the Jews employ. The fact is, the Jews of this time were, in fact, Edomites. The Pharisees were all Edomites, although they did have some Judahite converts among them, just as today. The Jews created this false idea called Judeo-Christianity, which is a contradiction in terms. You're either for Yahshua or against him. You cannot be both. It's ridiculous. So if you're a Judaic Christian, you're actually a Jew. You're literally a Jew because you believe the lies they tell you. So you can't be for Yahshua and against him at the same time. And the Jews are definitely against him. So if you believe any of their lies, you've allowed the Jews to turn you against your own Savior.
Yeah, and I mean, now moving on to 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 through 9. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour. Whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world.
Yeah, but no, we're all saved. We were all saved at the cross. Nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
See the nonsense that's being preached by the churches, the Judeo churches? They disregard all these warnings.
And I found a couple of things in there. I just put a warning to Israel everywhere. The devil is constantly seeking those he can capture in the Jewish owned and operated globalist dictatorship in these last days. That includes the churches, Judeo Christian churches.
Yes.
Yeshua the Christ warns Israel about Satan in John chapter 14, verse 30. Hereafter I will not talk much with you, for the prince of this world cometh and hath nothing in me. And I go on to say Satan is referred to as the prince of this world, and this is a very apt title, as those in disobedience to Yahweh's laws in the world today are clearly serving Satan. Also, remember how Jesus...
Christians, so-called Christians, and white nationalists. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we already talked, didn't we, about politics, people thinking they could change the system by politics. Of course, that won't work.
Yes.
Also, remember how Jesus Christ referred to the Jews as of this world in John chapter 8, verse 23. This world that John chapter 14, verse 30 states... Satan is the prince of.
Right. Well, let's contrast that really briefly with John 3:16, where it says that Yahweh so loved the world that he gave his only son. The problem with the word world is it can refer to different elements of the world. So in there, it's talking about the Israelite world, okay? And this in this passage is talking about the whole world of polity, the politics of the world. And it can also be translated as age. It doesn't always refer to a physical place, okay? So Satan is the prince of this age, which should be obvious to everybody.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is that we get the false Messiah coming first as well.
Yes. Amen. So open your eyes, folks, right? The problem with most Christians is they don't read the Bible. They just don't. And even if they did, they've been so prejudiced to a Jewish version of the Bible that they can't understand it without some guidance. And that's why Christian identity is here. We are the remnant that are providing that guidance as to how to read the Bible. If you make the mistake of assuming that the Jews are the Israelites of the world, then you cannot understand the Bible. You will not understand it, and you will be flailing away in confusion, just like those people afflicted with ergo fungus.
Mm. Exactly. Okay? Yeah, and I won't read the other comments. I just put that, furthermore, Satan's arrival and subsequent corruption of Israel is stated in Revelation chapter 12, verse 9, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent, called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him, to show that they are in the earth.
They're here. They're here. No doubt about it. Yes.
And then the next one I've got is 1 John chapter 2, verse 22. Who is a liar but he that denieth that Jesus is the Christ? He is Antichrist that denieth the Father and the Son.
Well, that's speaking of tares, isn't it?
Yeah. Who doesn't accept Jesus Christ? I mean, it's, you know, there's no conspiracy to that, folks. They say it in their own mouths, you know, out in their own mouths. They spit when they walk past the Christian church. They've changed... education in schools to get Christianity removed from schools. They don't want Jesus Christ. They don't want any nativity scenes at Christmas. Anything to do with Christ they want to get rid of. And so it goes show that the Jews are nothing to do with Yahweh. They're only to do with Satan.
Yeah, so this perfectly defines Antichrist. I mean, it can't be any clearer. Folks, the Jews are the Antichrist, period. Very simple.
Yeah, and I just said there's a great deal of belief among the Jews today that they will collectively become their own Messiah. Here we can see that that is correct, for they are collectively the Antichrist.
Amen. Amen. They are collectively the Antichrist. Not hard to see once you understand that they're imposters impersonating Israel, impersonating Judah, and they've been doing this for 2,000 years.
Yeah, exactly. And I've got a longish segment I've put in here, which I don't think... It's basically Revelation 3:9. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before thy feet and to know that I have loved thee. And I said this describes the modern Jewish race today. They have developed the name Jews as a trademark to appeal to both religious and non-religious people. Its appeal to religious people is the lie promoted by Jews that they are the Israel of the Bible, and as a result they can do what they want to whoever they want, as they are God's chosen people. Not only do we know that this is not the case, but we see this delusion was predicted by Yeshua the Christ. We can also see that the Jews are destined to find out who they truly are, as if they didn't already know, and who right. Israel is.
And I put, right. Oh, yeah, let me just
you
stop
jump
you
in.
Right
you
there,
jump in. Yeah.
Revelation 3:9 is obviously addressed to Israel.
Yeah.
And so it distinguishes Israel from the Jews. Okay. To know that I have loved thee, Israel, and they, the Jews, I will make them to come and worship before thy Israel's feet. Clearly distinguishing between Israel and the Jews here. Come on, people, read your Bible. Read it with a clear mind, not a fungus mind, but with a clear mind. And the cobwebs, there's cobwebs in there too. So... yeah, the identity perspective is right on the money in every case, identifying who the tares are, who identifying who the liars are, who the Antichrist is. It's so simple once you get rid of that false idea that the Jews are Israel.
Yeah, and I've said that the appeal of the term Jew or Jews to non-religious people is in showing that the Jews are a long-suffering persecuted people, which again allows them to do what they want to whoever they want, in this case because they allege they have suffered so much throughout history. This is what the promotion of political correctness has been about since day one, making anyone who questions their actions out as racist. So people look the other way when they see Jewish power at work through banking, politics and the media. Unfortunately, as a result, these non-religious people do not bother to investigate even one aspect of the alleged persecution of the Jews. For example, if the persecution of the Jews is such an unquestionable fact, why is any investigation of their last alleged persecution during World War II prohibited by law in 16 countries, with the penalty for the breaking of that law being prison terms of several years? Why also is this the only alleged event in history that can result in a prison sentence for people who choose to investigate it?
Right. Yeah, as Germar Rudolph and David Irving have found out personally, right?
Yeah.
You question the hoax.
Yeah, and then just concluding this section before we go on to the law, and we've got a long section on the law, and... I'd be interested in your input here because I worked on it as best I could and you may have things that you agree or disagree with or things you can add, but I'll read out what I put together here, Pastor Eli. Revelation 3:9 and 2:9 both have a double meaning showing the prophetic wisdom of the scriptures. The meaning can be obtained if you leave the word Jew as Jew and not change it to Israel. On that basis, it can be argued that both verses also apply to the Ashkenazi Khazarian Jews, who represent 90% of the Jews on the planet today. The Ashkenazi Khazarian Jews originally descended from an area in Eastern Europe which converted to Judaism in 740 AD. As they were a mixed mongrel people, they may have contained mixtures of Israel, Jewish and other racial blood, but whatever the case, they cursed themselves by grafting themselves onto the Antichrist Jewish religion and have served Satan well ever since. Remember, although Yahweh's people Israel have to be racially pure, Satan will take anybody who is prepared to turn from Yahweh. Indeed, he even tried to tempt Yahweh's son, Yeshua the Christ. On that basis,
he'll take anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on that basis, when considering the Ashkenazi Khazarian Jews who say they are Jews but are not, they are a people converted to Judaism, Revelation 2:9 and Revelation 3:9 can be read unchanged. Furthermore, the word synagogue comes from the Greek language and means assembly or to bring together. That would change synagogue of Satan to read the bringing together of Satan's children. And now if you read Revelation 2:9 and 3:9 again with that in mind. So it was really my feeling. You see, the strange thing was when I did the Synagogue of Satan, the book, I chose that title because I thought that meant the Ashkenazi Jews. I thought that there were some Jews out there that were good. And the Ashkenazi Jews were, I knew the Rothschild family were from that, and there were 90% of Jews today. And it fitted. Beware of those who say they are Jews but are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Well, the Ashkenazi Jews are all these evil people that seem to be in control. They say they're Jews, they're not, but they act in an evil manner, so they're the synagogue of Satan. And that's why I chose it. And so I used to look back when I found identity and think, you know, I've really misinterpreted that, but it still fits. So when I look at it today, it can be read in either way. I mean, to my mind, it's beware of those who say they are. The real meaning is beware of those who say they are Jude of the tribe of Judah, but are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. The Jews say they are. So basically, beware of those who say they are the Israel of the Bible, but they are not. They are the children of Satan. That's the Jews today. They say they're the Israel of the Bible. They're not. They're the children of Satan. But it was interesting that even though I'd chosen that title for the completely wrong reasons, it still fitted
it still
for me. Yeah, and I guess that's what I was talking about. So I don't know if I should have said that, or if I shouldn't have done, or if you can have more than one interpretation, because I think you should only have one, because there should only be one truth. But I felt that was worth putting in there as well.
Well, let's do it both ways. Let's read it from the perspective of most people who assume that the Jews are in fact Judah/Israel. Okay? So it says, "Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Judah/Israel, and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before thy feet, and to know you that I have loved thee, Israel." Okay? So, well, we can see that there are a group of people who are fake Jews in the common sense of the word, fake Judahites, fake Israelites. So the question is, who is impersonating real Judah and real Israel? Well, we just discovered who it was. Who are the liars, right? 1 John 2:22. Who are the ones who are lying their way into your hearts and minds? The Jews. Now, in reality, we know that the Jews are, in fact, in contemporary terms, were Edomites and Canaanites. The Khazars did not appear yet. So when these words were written, it applied to the Edomites of Judea. So we can interpret it this way now. Behold, I will make of them the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Judeans and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before thy feet. So who are these Judeans who are not Judahites? Well, they're the Edomites, who were contemporary at this point in time. And as you pointed out, now there's even more of them, or Ashkenazim, who pretend to be Judah/Israel today as well. So however you read the word Jew, it fits.
Yeah, and I think that's the real key. And I touched on it before that, there's that line, faith without works is dead.
Yes, right.
But you could turn that around, say works without faith is dead. And my point being there that you can literally give an identity believer pretty much any Bible, and they will naturally see that where it says the word Jew, they will know when it means the children of Satan, and when it's a mistranslation for the tribe of Judah, a Judean, exactly, what have you. It's just natural to them as they see it. And people from the outside would say, oh, well, you're changing that to suit your beliefs. And it's like, well, no, we're not. We're correcting it. Because the point is that it's all really quite well structured up to that point. There's no problem in, when Christ is talking to them, Yeshua, in John, chapter 8, it's quite clear who the Jews are, etc. And then they're starting to try and turn
Pharisees
it.
Pharisees and the followers of the Pharisees, And Jesus says very clearly, you are not my sheep.
Yeah.
And these are the same people that people call Jews.
Yeah, and when you cross-reference that with, I think, the book of Mark and see who he's speaking to, it's the Pharisees and all the Jews, i.e. every Jew.
Yes. Right. When it follows the Pharisees, yeah.
Yeah, and so the point is you can't suddenly then go from there and start saying that, oh, you know, there are these good Jews and what have you. It's deliberate mistranslations. It's almost like, you know, right. The translations were going through and that was like, oh, no, we can't say that, so we'll start changing it here. And some people might have done it. There might have been scholars that did it this way in a King James translation or others, just to actually, because they knew that people would work it out. But they mm-hmm. could show their yeah. bosses at the time, like King James or whoever was pulling the strings, you know, any Jews behind the scenes, and say, look, we have changed it. So here, if you look here, it says, and they'll say, yeah, that's fine, we'll sign that off for you, because they can't be bothered, they're lazy, and they're not going to bother to read it all through. But the translators there could have been forced into making these later incorrect translations right. of the word Jew, Judah, Judean, etc.
Right.
But because they've done such a bad job of it, I think they might have done it deliberately so that we'd find out, Pastor Eli.
Well, it's a very interesting point. I think the vast majority of, for example, the King James Translation Committee simply were tricked by the Jews. You know, because it's just assumed that the Jews are the people of the Old Testament, and they're not. In the Old Testament, the word Jew always is translated from the Hebrew Yehudi, which means Judah or yeah. Judahite, depending on whether it's speaking of one person or more than one person. Okay, and the Judahites were a racially exclusive people, as all the 12 tribes were, and they maintained their racial exclusivity throughout the history of the Maccabean period, which proves that they were racially exclusive, and did not, and they refused to circumcise non-Israelite males. All right? So when did the law change that allowed all of a sudden for Judahites to become universalists? It never happened. Now, the problem in the New Testament is that the word Jew comes from the word Judeos, which generally means a person living in the country of Judea, which by that time was already a multicultural, race-mixed state with a lot of Edomites in it. Okay, so in the New Testament, it comes from a word that has a completely different meaning. It has a territorial meaning in the New Testament, not a racial meaning as it does in the Old Testament. So you always have to bear that in mind, that the word Jew is confused, confounded, and the Jews like it that way because they want to confuse you.
Exactly. And that's a great sum up there, Pastor Eli. So, yeah, if you like, we can move on to the next section,
yes.
which is where we start with the law. And just to remind people that the heading here is law bestiality. And if people are aware that there's beasts with both two and four legs...
Right.
yes. This is just one line, folks. Exodus chapter 22, verse 19. Whosoever lieth with a beast shall surely be put to death. Pastor Eli.
Well, it's interesting that even in the Talmud, the Jews quote this passage, and they equate it, and they say there are such things as two-legged beasts. So, but why don't they teach that publicly?
Well, they accuse the white race of being those beasts,
yeah,
don't they?
Right.
They call us Goy and all that.
Of
yeah,
being beasts, right? yeah. So the fact is, even the Talmud agrees with us, but the Jews never publicize the fact. Number one, that Cain had descendants, right? Why?
Yeah.
Because they can't publicize that because they're guilty, right? They would be blowing their own cover if they talked about the Cain satanic seed line. Therefore, they don't. But it is in the Talmud.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the way that they... It goes back to what we say, that the Jews always accuse us of being what they are. You know,
right.
So if you look back in Germany or Germany Must Perish, David James has been doing a good series on that on Saxon's Creed, which follows later on,
yes.
and... I'll just say thank you to David for all his help on a YouTube page I've been doing this week. But yeah, it essentially, it goes back to that. They've always been good. When they commit evil, they then try and blame it on someone else. And I think even going back to their Talmud, they knew, you know, essentially you can say when it comes to a beast, I mean, Satan is referred to as a beast.
Yes.
As well. So, you know, they're the beasts of, but yeah. You know, you can see the different identities. What it really boils down to is, I think 38 times in the Old Testament, it just says about the race mixing and it's not to happen. You shouldn't be doing it.
Yes.
It is. Well, here, you know, that's what adultery is. And so this is just another backup for that, as far as I'm concerned. Whichever way you want to read beast, if you want to read it as a goat or a cow or a horse or whatever, but you also have to equate it to, you know, the fact is that you're only permitted to procreate with your own race. And so everything else can be, certainly in this, I mean, what have you got? You've got the pure white race, the Israelites, and then it refers to, you know, the other races, as we said in Genesis, when you talk about the beasts of the field, and then you've got the Jews, who are the descendants of Satan. So there's not really anyone left apart from the pure white race that the pure white race are allowed to, you know, procreate with.
Yeah. I can't help but laugh because I just read some Talmudic commentaries on this passage, and the Jews would actually put the four-legged beast on trial.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, that's what they talk about in their Talmud. So in other words, a four-legged beast had sex with an Israelite woman. Okay, so I can understand having an intelligent person being put on trial, but a four-legged beast? Okay, no, I'm sorry, folks, that doesn't happen. Only a two-legged beast can be put on trial and executed with the death penalty. Okay. This is the Talmud. This shows the level of thinking of the Jews on the scriptures, which is totally fictitious. They make these things up. But here, I want to quote chapter 23 of Deuteronomy and show you how the Bible, they confuse. Now, you can use the term beast figuratively or literally here, and here it has to be literal, because we're talking about the death penalty for people who engage in race mixing. It says the death penalty. This is not figurative stuff. This is literal stuff. But here's how the King James Version has butchered the text. Deuteronomy 23, verse 2. It says, "An illegitimate child shall not enter into the congregation of Yahweh. Even to his 10th generation shall he not enter into the congregation of Yahweh." How can this be figurative? It cannot be figurative. And the word is actually bastard from the Hebrew, which means mongrel. All right? There is no such thing as a figurative mongrel. And here, the commentary in my King James says, figuratively, a half-breed.
Right? Yeah.
What the hell is a figurative half-breed? There's no such thing. It's a ridiculous idea. It says, a mongrel shall not enter into the congregation of Yahweh. And then verse 3 verifies this. An Ammonite or a Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of Yahweh. They're mongrels. All right? Any more explanation required?
Well, and I think it's interesting the use of the term half-breed, meaning that, you know, there was that questioning from Israel as to, well, you know, I procreated with a non-white, but the child is still half-white, so can half of the child come into the congregation? And, you know, that's right. Why this was needed, because it was like, no, yes. I see what you're saying, you know, I see what you're saying. There's still half the child, technically, is pure white race, and the other half isn't. But I have to tell
it's
you...
it's not pure anymore, right?
Exactly. Yeah, sorry.
Careful
yeah.
You phrase yourself.
Yeah, sorry. It's
I
white
got
race. Yeah.
For making that mistake.
Yeah, that's true. And that, of course, that takes us back to adultery and adulterate, and then what you just said about to the 10th generation, and we've worked that out mathematically, and it's over 1 in 1,000, you know, so it's you know, so you've got 0.01%.
Right.
It's just ridiculous.
I got crucified because I accidentally said a white person who is only 95% white. Oh, okay. Yeah, Eli says that you're white. You're 100% white if you're only 95. And I just made a mistake in enunciation. I never said that 95% equals 100%. Okay, but obviously such people do look white.
Yeah, right? Well, I mean, you know, there's
only Yahweh really knows. And he's the one who selects the remnant.
And this takes us back to the parable of the wheat and the tares again, as to why we can't be trusted to basically, because we're either not going to get them all, or we're going to get some that aren't actually tares. You know,
that's right.
I think someone said, I'm not sure if he was or he wasn't, but when it went back to that thing that, you know, I was that story I said about Daryl Bradford Smith thought I was Jewish because Alfred Hitchcock looked Jewish, and and actually, as I think I said before here, I was born Andrew Richard Webb. My stepfather isn't Jewish, although his surname is Hitchcock, and apparently Alfred Hitchcock wasn't Jewish, but he certainly looks quite odd. Alfred Hitchcock does. He certainly, you know, he looks Jewish to me. But they seem to think that he absolutely wasn't, and he may well not have been, but sometimes you can have that hangdog type look like he had, and you'd say, well, that's right. A Jew. And if he isn't, then, you know, you'd be committing an offence by basically taking him out.
That's why
it talks so it could work either way.
That's an excellent point, Andrew, because it says in there that Yahshua and his angels are going to do the job.
Yeah. Okay. And we don't know who the angels are. The angels are going to know who they are at the time. But you can't run around thinking, well, I'm an angel now because I think I know who the Jews are. You know, you need a little bit more than that. And it says, Yahweh and his angels.
Who's to prove whether a guy's a tare or not, right? You can't go by linguistics. It's a DNA. It's a DNA thing. And Yahshua and the angels know. And unless, you know, the people who want to get rid of, you know, anybody they think is a half-breed, we can't go around thinking like that. It's Yahshua's job. He's going to take care of business when he comes back.
Yeah, absolutely. And
the best we can do is associate with people we know. What does it say? By their fruit shall you know them.
And the other thing, I think that's what Yahweh's given us. You know, I talked about, I've got a great show coming up on Thursday with Chris Peed's new Ensign group. And, you know, these people all over the world, and most people don't have physical people they can go and meet. And
congregation.
A congregation that they can share these beliefs with. They're scattered all over. But Yahweh's given us this vehicle where we can all come together. And, you know, you can go on there, and you could be in a different time zone. There might just be two of you on, but there's always someone for you to speak to. You'll generally go on there at some point. There'll be someone there, and you can send them a message or pick up the phone. And it's great. It's a great support group as well for everybody to get together and you know, bond with each other over this faith. And I think it's Yahweh's gift to us. And that's why the Jews have taken this gift, which is essentially based on the internet. And they've perverted it into either making money or true perversion through pornography. And if you look at all the that comes out, I mean, even you get these scams coming through where, you know, you'll get I remember years ago, it was, I don't know if you remember this, but this was back, it would have been 2010 or 2011. And I got an email from you, and you were apparently in Scotland and you've run out of money or something. And
it was a scam.
Yeah, and someone had seized your thing. And the reason I mention this is John Friend on his show yesterday on Friday night with Dave Gahari, his realist report, the one that he does on Renegade Broadcasting. Yeah. And I had Dave Gahari on the same day going through the AFP for that week. John mentioned that he got an email from John Kaminsky. And it said something, I've typed this up as webmail, please click here. And I saw that, and I'm like, I'm not clicking anywhere. This doesn't look right. I've had lots of emails from John Kaminsky. And, he's never told me to click here yet. And so I just left it, and I sent him an email, said, look, I've had something from you. It was empty or something like that. Anyway, John Friend went into it, and he said he clicked it, and he spent most of the day trying to get a virus off his computer. Now, John Kaminsky doesn't go sending viruses around to people, and John actually got back to me and said that he's had a problem and someone had done this. But I think it's worth throwing this in now just as a little segue. If you get anything from anybody, click this, click that, click this link and see some frog dancing around or something like that, you know? The point is, if you don't really need it, don't click it, because there's so many things out there. And if I'd have clicked that and I've just had all these problems with my computer, it could have affected me being broadcast today or anything. Sure. You don't know how deep it's going to do. But unless there's something, you know, I've never sent things out, just click here, click there, etc., because I wouldn't do it myself, so be very careful of attachments. And for some reason, people can, I don't know how they do it, but they can seize an email address, and somehow right. they can hack it. And once they hack it, what they do is they go through the entire address book, and they try and write some sort of message, like the one, you know, I referred to. And I've had that from someone else. So I'm in a certain country, I've run out of money, can you help me? And so and it's like, well... Yeah,
exactly,
and,
right.
And it's always that's written in a generic way. It's never written to you. It's not like, hi, Andy, can you help me out, please, or something like that. Do you see what I mean? And so you can sure. see when it's written to a lot of people. So people have got to be careful. But these are the sort of scams that evil people use this gift that Yahweh has given us for. So
generally, they're Jews. Yeah. Generally, they're Jews, yes. Well, actually, that brings up a point I forgot to mention about Jews. That this idea that the Talmudic Jews, that the Sephardic Jews are the good Jews, and that the Ashkenazi Jews are the evil Jews. No, folks, it's the Sephardic Jews who invented the Talmud,
yeah.
by which all the other Jews operate. So there is no such thing as a good Jew, because they're all Talmudists, whether they actually practice the Talmud like the rabbis do and the Rothschilds do, or whether they're just part of the, you know, the, how should I call it? Well, they refer to them as the lesser brethren, you know, the Jews that they can sacrifice periodically when they need to. So if you're any category of Jew, if you believe in Judaism in any way, shape, or form, you're evil, period. You're evil. So there is no such thing as a good Jew. The only possibility, we talked about Benjamin Friedman possibly being an adopted white person into a Jewish family, because he turned state's evidence against Jewry, okay? In his book, Facts Are Facts, he says the Jews are not Israelites. Here's a Jew, people who consider him a Jew, saying the Jews are not Israelites, they're Ashkenazi Khazars, and Jesus was not a Jew. He might as well have been identity.
Well, it's funny you say that, because
I think you discovered here at the end of that he kind of backs off and becomes a Judeo-Christian.
Yeah, I know someone in you know, from a few years ago, and they were quite a bit older than me. I used to know them, a group of friends, and I knew them from work originally, and then they used to go to a pub that I used to go to, and but basically he was adopted. And he was convinced his father was a Jew, because his father had a Jewish name. He thought the name was Jewish. It was Wotton, Wotton. And I don't know that that's Jewish, but for some reason he thought it was.
No, it's, yeah,
no, I don't
it's
think
actually
it is.
A version of Odin.
Well, that's interesting. But he yes. thought it was, and because he thought it was, he wouldn't hear any criticism of Israel or Jews or anything, even though he was adopted. So there's no way he well, certainly from the area he was adopted in, which was in Dorset, going back to the 1920s, 30s, very unlikely, although he could have been nobility and what have you, some Jewish thing. But in all likelihood, unlikely. But this was his feeling, was because of that, he wouldn't entertain anything like that, even though he had no proof. And even if that was the case, if there's evil going on, why do you justify it? Because you think that your father might be Jewish. Was he around killing Palestinians or what have you? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
But
yeah.
That's how some people's minds work.
Well, there's your hypnotic episode.
Yeah.
Right? Darnell, right?
Yeah.
Now that I recall, I think it was David James who told me that that Friedman kind of backed off. And he was. He became a Catholic, okay, which is almost as bad as being a Jew. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, my problem.
So, yeah, it's a fungus. Catholicism is a fungus, too.
Yeah, I mean, my problem with Friedman has always been he goes on, and they did this, and I know because I was there, and he says it like all proudly. And I'm like, well, what, did you ever try and stop him? You know, if you're one of these people and you get like, you know, oh, what was his name? Dean Call or something. He was some serial killer in the early 70s, some homosexual serial killer, and he managed to have a couple of people working with him that were boys he'd seduce, but for some reason he'd let them live, and as a result they used to help procure his victims, and he killed about 30 odd people. I'm pretty sure it was Dean Call. But the fact is that these people, they got done for murder also. Now, they didn't get the death penalty like he did, but they went to prison for life. And the fact is because they were part of it. They helped it happen. And so it's all well and good Benjamin Friedman saying, no, I was at the Treaty of Versailles. I saw that. Well, what did you do to stop it then?
Right.
And
right.
This is what I get at. He's suddenly, in later life, it's like he had some epiphany. Oh, he realised it was bad. I disagree with that completely. What I believe happened is that he thought he was on his way to having all this different property and money and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and he didn't get as big a slice of the pie as he thought that he deserved. And because he didn't get that big slice...
self-hating Jew.
Yeah, because he didn't get what he thought he was owed, he said to the Jews, right, you give me what I think that I'm owed, so I want this mansion and this manor, etc., etc., or I will go and spill the beans on what I know. And they just said, well, go and spill the beans on what you know, because we're not going to give you what you think that you deserve. And so he said, right, you know, there's no honour among thieves, folks. Jews do generally stick together racially, but they'll quite easily, you see, they're all insane and they all think that they should be the top Jew. And so occasionally you get these little power plays.
They are Darnell, so they're automatically insane.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, which brings me back to point number 7, hindered speech. Anybody infected with Darnell poisoning can't say a word about the Jews. They have to speak under their breath about the Jews, right, for fear of the Jews. And it's quite possible that Benjamin Friedman, you know, was afflicted with that, you know. If he turns against his people too strongly, they'll just do him in, you know. So he could have had that fear, as many, you know, who've turned against, like they did 13th Tribe. He was murdered by the Jews for exposing the reality that the Ashkenazi Jews aren't Israelites. That was a death sentence writing that book.
Yeah, I've read some interesting things on him, though, as well. I mean, Kessler was, he was working for the BBC and all sorts of stuff, and I think some people were trying to say that because he was using it as a way of, if you go at it from another angle, and then you can sort of say, well, at some point, when the conspiracy gets found out, they can blame fake Jews and say that the Sephardim are the true children of Yahweh. Do you see what I mean? And then they're still involved.
Sure.
And so you can turn it into it anyway. But yeah, there is a chance you could see it from either perspective, I suppose.
Right. And the problem with that idea, not only are the Ashkenazim a mixed race of Mongol, Hittite, and Japheth, which is white, they do have a large percentage of white DNA in them, Japhetic white, but not Shemitic white. The Hittites were a branch of the Canaanites. The Mongoloid Turks of Turkey are a branch of the Canaanites, and they admit they have Turkish blood, okay? And you have Edomite blood because the rabbis who came up to teach the Ashkenazim were obviously Edomites, and so there's Edomite blood in the Ashkenazim genome as well. So in any case, there is no Israelite blood in them whatsoever, period.
Exactly. And, yeah, we won't go on to the next section because it's quite big. I was scrolling up and down, but just to let the listeners know, the next time we do an In the Name of Yahweh show, we've got the blessings for keeping and the curses for disobeying the law. So that should be an interesting topic to go through. But certainly, I mean, we've gone through today, you know, the different aspects, revelation, etc. So is there anything that you'd like to go into? We've got about 4 minutes before I've got to start the music, so I'll hand back to you, Pastor Eli, for anything that you want to raise.
Let me just read the bottom paragraph of this deception in the church, because it is obviously a metaphor, but his interpretation of the metaphor is it's just false teachings and not fake Israelites, okay? He says, there's a time to distinguish between Darnell and wheat, and of course that time is now. The fruit of the darnel is smaller than the fruit produced by true wheat, and the Jews typically are about foot shorter than Anglo-Saxon Aryans. They say the difference is very distinguishable and obvious when they grow up, obviously, and the difference in the sizes of the seeds makes separating them an easy task. There are those who have convulsed, been made drunk, trembled uncontrollably, stammered in their speech, were stupefied, turned giddy, etc., who have tried to tell us that that was wheat, when in fact it was tares. There are though also those who have not fallen into such things, but have brought confusion into the church with darnel, such as the non-Trinitarian doctrine. So he's metaphor. He's got his own interpretation of the metaphor. Of course, our interpretation is seedline. Non-Trinitarian doctrine. So if you're not teaching Trinity, you're somehow darnel. A watered-down gospel, well, that's true, and agendas that lead the church off into corporate efforts God never sanctioned. Are these things of wheat or darnel? These are just some of the things, folks. Some are obviously darnel, and while with others it takes time to make the distinction. This I know for sure. The one who planted the good seed which bears fruit will come back to harvest his wheat, and not one grain of darnel will be found in the barn. This is not just figurative darnel. This is literal darnel is what we're trying to tell you. Okay? And the Jews are that darnel.
Exactly. And yeah, it's excellent to go through that as well. We really want to try and get things from different perspectives. And I know you've always got your eye open on different things that yes. Come out. And obviously based upon all the different articles and what have you that you've got on AngloSaxonIsrael.com. We've got to go through those and some of your works definitely in the future.
I think From Cain to Khazaria would be a good one when we're done with In the Name of Yahweh, because that goes all right. There's a distinction between the Sephardic and Ashkenazi Jews. It goes into great detail on that subject.
Excellent. Okay, well, we've got just a couple of minutes left, so do you want to go into who you've got on later with the Voice of Christian Israel?
Today is supposed to be Pastor Alan Campbell. And he wants to discuss the different differences between BI and CI, that is British Israel and Christian Identity, which you alluded to earlier in today's show. And tomorrow I'm actually going to be pre-recording an interview with John Friend, and we're going to discuss the differences between Ashkenazim and Sephardim and how to affect – there are no Jews or Israelites, because David Duke and McDonald – have come out with a video claiming that the Ashkenazim are in fact Israelites, which is, of course, nonsense. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. And it will be broadcast a week from Monday as well.
Excellent. Right. Okay, well, we'll have to wrap up. So Yahweh bless everyone. And Yahweh bless Pastor Eli.
Likewise, brother. And praise Yahweh and pass the ammunition. See you next time.
See you next time.
Beep.